From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Lane County is situated in some truly stunning landscapes. The Pacific Ocean to the west, the fertile Willamette Valley in the middle, and the Cascade Range to the east. But of course, our landscape also encompasses potential disasters like wildfires and the Cascadia subduction zone. Today on the show, you'll hear from the new Lane County Emergency Manager and learn about the critical nature of that role. With so much potential for community-wide crises, coordination amongst all first responders is going to be key, and this position sits at the center of that synchronization. Then, in the last part of the show, we'll hear about another challenge facing beleaguered Springfield Public Schools. This time, it's lawsuits from former administrators. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Some jobs require a leader to be proactive. Others require a leader to be reactive, and many require leaders to be both. Today on the show, we talk with a new Lane County leader who definitely needs to be both. It's the county's emergency manager, and we talk with her next. Monica Larkham, the new emergency manager for Lane County, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Before we get into your new role, talk about your previous role with the county.
Yes. So previous to the emergency manager position, I was with Lane County Sheriff's Office as one of the search and rescue program supervisors. And so I was with the sheriff's office since July 2023 for about 3 years. And I supervised about 150 volunteers in the search and rescue program and helped manage several training programs, like our technical rope rescue program with Eugene Mountain Rescue, our Search and Rescue 101 program, our youth program, our medical program, and all sorts of stuff. So got a lot of experience, you know, working with local partnerships and responding to incidents. You know, got a lot of experience working with people, managing incidents ranging from, you know, oh, we're going to go down this distant Forest Service road and go look for someone who's stuck in their vehicle, to, you know, managing multi-day, multi-operational period incidents where we're looking for missing people or doing rescues up on the mountains and all that good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then before that, talk about your work with the Forest Service, right?
Park Service, Park National Service. Park Service. Yeah. So, yes, people often conflate the two, and really the only people who care about the difference are the people who work for either the Forest Service or Park Service. But yeah, so I was previously working mostly for the National Park Service since 2016. Also briefly worked for the U.S. Geological Survey up in Corvallis, but in the Park Service, I bounced around all around the country, worked for a bunch of national parks, did some digital media, public affairs type work back east with the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal National Historical Park. And yes, it is a mouthful. And then worked at Arches National Park in Utah, Crater Lake here in Oregon, and Mount Rainier, and a couple other places.
All right, cool. So explain to listeners what the emergency manager does for Lane County. Talk about the job.
The job. Well, I'm still learning what all the job entails, but I think if I were to put it in the most simple terms, it's about helping manage emergencies or incidents in the county that surpass or overly stress local resources that are already pre-built to manage those similar incidents. So obviously a big example would be the wildfires that occur with too much frequency here in the county. Obviously the actual response to fighting those wildfires is managed by the administrative agency, which typically has been the Forest Service. But there's also several components that affect, you know, our residents, obviously very strongly affect our residents here in the county. You know, obviously the people of Oak Ridge and Mackenzie Bridge and Blue River have had a disproportionate experience in having to deal with being evacuated due to wildfire So emergency management assists in helping manage those components like evacuations, notifications, and then managing other things like mass care and shelter if people are displaced from their homes. And, you know, that obviously doesn't go for just wildfires, but
sure.
it goes for flooding, tornadoes, if we were to have them. Tornadoes actually is a disaster outlined by our natural hazards mitigation plan. So it is potentially a thing that we'd have to deal with. And then obviously on the coast, the big hazards are tsunamis and landslides from potential earthquakes and inundation.
Yeah, which I wanted to bring that up because of the two major disasters that I think most people have in their minds, one is predictive, wildfires. We know they're going to occur. We don't know where or exactly when, but we know they're going to happen. And we know a rough season when they're going to most likely occur. And then the Cascadia subduction zone, which we know it's there, but we have no idea when it's going to occur. If it could be tomorrow, it could be 100 years from now. What kind of challenges does that place on emergency preparedness, knowing that Cascadia could happen anytime or never in our lifetime, and wildfires, yeah, we know it's going to happen?
Yeah, it's, that is the million-dollar question right there. It's something, you know, it's kind of a consistent tension that you have in emergency management is bridging that gap or balancing addressing those more immediate needs and more immediate hazards with, you know, preparation for long-term and, you know, in theory, much larger hazards.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, with the resources I have at hand, my focus so far has been to focus on handling or building up our resources and our capacity to handle those smaller incidents. So by small, I don't mean, you know, wildfires are still
sure.
large
sure.
and still extremely difficult. But, you know, a Cascadia type earthquake, that would be overwhelming to any city, any county, any town. And so building up our capacity to deal with smaller type incidents like wildfires, making sure that we have processes for damage assessment, that we have systems in place to help get people individual assistance or infrastructural financial reimbursement in case of, you know, business damages, public infrastructure damages, like focusing on those things. So then hopefully, in theory, with Cascadia, we would be better prepared to respond to that in a larger type incident. But also there are definitely things that I think about and try to work towards, you know, as far as doing what I can to prioritize retrofitting for bridges and other critical infrastructures to help us withstand those larger type incidents. But yeah, there's always that tension there about figuring out what to focus on, because, you know, I don't know anyone who I've spoken to recently who's saying they have plenty of money and they don't know what to do with it all. And so I'm definitely in that same type of situation where I'm trying to figure out how to maximize my time and my my resources in order to do the most we can for our community.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Monica Larkham, who is the new emergency manager for Lane County. Talk about the challenges of coordination amongst multiple jurisdictions. A lot of times, you know, as you said, some might get overwhelmed, but also I imagine, I don't know, I don't want to say turf battles, but obviously I imagine it can be confusing as to who's lead, who's responsible. How do you kind of work in that sort of environment?
Yeah, I think emergency management can play a really important role because in some ways, we're a little bit neutral. We're a little bit like Switzerland, where really our job is to help coordinate things. And so I don't necessarily have a ton of turf that I consider mine, but I'm just wanting to make sure that everybody's turf is taken care of and that, you know, our community members are able to get the services they need in emergencies. You know, by and large, I've honestly, when you come to a table with that attitude where you're just trying to assist the public and community members in getting better services, making sure that, you know, Their government is there when they need them and to help provide those essential services in emergencies. You know, as far as turf battles, I haven't seen a whole lot of that. I think by and large, everyone is, you know, wanting those very same things. And there's definitely, you know, things that can be better understood or, you know, miscommunications and stuff. But people, by and large, want to help their communities. And, you know, I've seen just a whole bunch of good faith efforts. So I've been, it's really, I feel really grateful to get to work with so many people who just want the best for their community.
Okay. When you were, I want to go back to when you were in search and rescue, because to me, it seems like that was kind of a micro event. You're looking for perhaps a single lost hiker or something like that. And now this is much more of a macro job. But were there lessons in search and rescue that you feel like you can bring to this new role?
Absolutely. You know, in search and rescue, we talk about and use ICS a lot, which ICS is a organization system to
incident that, command structure.
Incident command structure, yes. Mm-hmm. An organization system to help manage incidents. And ICS is a scalable method of organization. And so as you mentioned, you know, organizing 20 to 40 searchers to go look for someone in the field, you know, you have similar needs in an abstract way as you do organizing, you know, evacuations or organizing response or, you know, developing and standing up shelters. And so there's definitely a lot of more administrative or, you know, maybe zoomed out uses, but there is definitely a lot of overlap between the two, because it really is about using those same tools of organization and structure and then just kind of zooming it out and using it in the larger, slightly more abstract way of emergency management.
Okay. As you're getting familiar with the role, I'm wondering, with your knowledge of the county and just sort of looking out with the knowledge as an emergency preparedness expert, are there areas in the county where you say, boy, this is a challenge? For example, I know a lot of people have talked about the fact that with the major hospital in Eugene closing down, you know, with Peace Health being the trauma center and the fact that there are bridges and other infrastructure that could cut that off. Are there things you look at and go, well, okay, these are going to be the areas where we really need to think about in the event of a community-wide emergency?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I definitely worry about our hospitals and making sure that those, you know, critical facilities are able to sustain normal operation in emergencies. You know, that's something that I've been in discussions with the City of Eugene Emergency Manager Althea Sullivan about. And then, you know, as far as other hazards, I think about, you know, as I mentioned, Oak Ridge, Blue River, Mackenzie Bridge, Florence, and Dune City, and those areas that have unique challenges due to access or lack thereof. So there's a lot of our rural communities that are kind of one way in, one way out type communities. The areas around Lane and Notai, Swiss Home, Mapleton, Deadwood, you know, I've had an opportunity to, you know, drive through quite a bit of our county. Mm-hmm. And so I have, you know, I have tacks in a map in my brain pointing out all the areas that I've come across that have vulnerabilities, you know, Rao River, you know, Darina, distant area, you know, those areas. I think a lot about how we would be able to get them the help they need in the case that there's hazards that are making that difficult.
Yeah. One of the things, when you were coordinating search and rescue, obviously you're working with volunteers. Talk about sort of, you know, the community coming together, whether it's volunteers or just neighborhood associations or groups that aren't paid to worry about emergencies, but might be necessary to come together in the event of a community-wide disaster.
Yeah, I mean, my work with search and rescue volunteers, I've just overall just been so impressed with their work and their dedication. And I have really valued my opportunity to work with them and support them, who all have a passion for helping their community. And it is an organizational challenge, because when you know, the more variables you introduce to an equation, the more complex solving that equation is. And so it's definitely a challenge to try and balance everything. But also, I don't have any, I'm so glad that there are organizations and people in their communities who are self-starters, and they are seeing problems and they're choosing to address it and fix it. Because in the case of any sort of widespread disaster like Cascadia, you know, it is going to be completely overwhelming. And so having folks focus on their own personal preparedness and their neighbors' preparedness and ability, like that type of grassroots effort is going to be really important as other larger resources come in.
She's Monica Larkham, the new emergency manager for Lane County. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Now let's bring in KLCC's Rebecca Hansen-White, who's been following all the twists and turns of Springfield Public Schools. KLCC's Rebecca Hansen-White. Rebecca, always great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Always great to be here.
Yeah, boy, you have been following the trials and tribulations of Springfield Public Schools. Would you talk about the latest challenge, which involves potential lawsuits?
Yeah, so Springfield was already previously facing a couple potential lawsuits from, if you can recall, the former superintendent and assistant superintendent stepped down and accused the school board of harassing them with constant requests for information and retaliating against them and doing some other things that they believe were to intimidate them. And so they both ended up resigning and separation agreements, and now there's two other administrators, the COO. So if you go to school board meetings, he's the one presenting financial information to the board.
Okay.
And then the human resources director are both also, it's called a tort claim notice. So in Oregon, you can't just sue the government. You've got to provide written notice first. And then you can, and that written notice is usually preserve records or, you know, here's the problem that we feel like we could litigate about. And so they've done that. That was actually back in January. They put three school board members on notice.
Okay.
And then they added a fourth school board member last month. You know, the Register Guard and, you know, Lookout did have that story first, and they've done great, that they were potentially going to sue over retaliation and accusing them of harming their reputations.
Okay. So what's the next step for it to move forward?
I mean, that could be sometimes tort claim notices, they're resolved without ever going to the to a courtroom.
Okay.
Sometimes the two parties can work it out between themselves without it really getting into court. So, you know, it's up to, there's probably going to be executive sessions. You know, there's probably going to be some stuff that we can't see that has to happen to get these situations resolved. But there is all sorts of complaints flying around about administrator school board members. The public is still really frustrated. So if you read my story, you know, those two administrators have been named in a separate, completely different complaint, you know, from stemming from all the turmoil this school year, an unfair labor practice complaint. So that's still getting worked out. And then we have the Ethics Commission also investigating. So there's a lot of moving parts and investigations happening over at Springfield Schools.
Yeah. And I guess my next question is this, from the board's perspective, kind of generally speaking, what has the board chair, the spokespeople for the district, what have they said about all of these investigations, especially with regard to retaliation and whatnot? I know that they're probably limited in what they can say, but have they talked about how they plan to navigate through all of these challenges?
You know, there is, I think, limited what everyone can say about pending litigation in terms of, you know, one of the frequent accusations that kind of underpins a lot of this stuff is open meeting of alleged violations. And so, You know, there were a couple board members that did go and testify before the Oregon Ethics Commission about those concerns and that investigation over whether they broke open meetings law. And, you know, what board members who did go in to testify about that was, you know, they're doing the best they can during a pretty chaotic time. They were trying to follow legal advice that they were receiving. You know, if you remember, the time period that a lot of this actually stems from is kind of December through February is the most turbulent time this school year. So that was the mid-year layoffs, and that was the previous school board chair resigning,
mm-hmm.
and the superintendent resigning, and then appointing an acting superintendent. So they're like, that was really chaotic and challenging. We were doing our best to follow legal advice. And the chair, Jonathan Light, was doing his duties as chair.
Okay. I'm going to kind of set up an analogy here just to get your reaction to it. Was the mid-year layoffs, was that like the first domino that kicked off a lot of these challenges, or was it sort of gasoline already poured onto a fire, if you will?
I think gasoline would be the more accurate.
Okay. If, boy, I tell you, you know, we're obviously now it's summer. I mean, does this allow for, I don't know, a cooling off period to some degree for what's going on at Springfield Public Schools?
That's possible. They don't meet for a couple weeks, so everyone's got to go on summer break. We've got a new superintendent, potentially mm-hmm. a little bit of a fresh start.
Yeah,
he just started his job, I believe, yesterday, and hopefully we'll be able to hear from him soon. That this one-year superintendent who will lead the district through the next school year, that's a potential for change. But, you know, right now it's summer, and it's a chance yet to cool off and get some space.
Cool off, metaphorically speaking.
Not literally.
Exactly. Rebecca Hansen-White, who covers so many things for us here at KLCC, including education in Springfield Public Schools. Thanks so much for coming in and chatting.
Thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, we'll bring you the story of a water crisis in Central Oregon from our colleague at OPB that pits rich landowners against the region's farmers. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.